In Parshas Balak, there are many beautiful things to talk about. When we look at the poetic words of the brachos that Bilam had to give to Klai Yisrael instead of the clothes, the curses that he wanted to give. Really beautiful, beautiful things. However, I would like to focus on what comes up later on, towards the end of the parasha, the avera of worshipping Baal Peor. And this is truly something fascinating, and to give us a lot of insight into the realities that we face today in our society and the things that are surrounding us today and the morality that we find ourselves surrounded by, and really to give us a clear understanding of what it is that's going on around us, up to and including perhaps why is it that this past week in Berkeley, California, they outlawed the use of manhole and instead said that manholes from now on have to be referred to as maintenance holes. Let's see. And of course, we're going to be needing help to explain all this. So we'll be using Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. The pasuk says that after the whole story of Bilam, unfortunately, Klai Yisrael falls prey to the temptation of Avodah Zarah. But not just are they tempted to worship Avodah Zarah, and not just do they actually worship Avodah Zarah, but the pasuk says, Vayitzamed Yisrael. Let's see if I can find Vayitzamed Yisrael of Baal Peor. And Israel attached itself to Baal Peor. And Hashem gets angry, and there's a consequence. Now this lashon, this wording, Vayitzamed, tells us that Klai Yisrael did not just worship Baal Peor, but Vayitzamed, they attached themselves. We're told that this is a very, very powerful, strong term of attachment, the way you would imagine a jar cap is sucked onto the jar. Klai Yisrael was sucked into the Avodah Zorah of Baal Peor. Now, there's no way to talk about Baal Peor other than to talk about it, even though it might make us a little bit uncomfortable. Baal Peor is a very unique cult of idol worship. Baal Peor, the way one worshipped the idol of Peor was to defecate on it. Now, I would imagine that if we suddenly found out that certain things in the Torah that were until now prohibited suddenly became mutter, let's say, kashrus is no longer an issue. We're told halachically you don't have to keep kashrus anymore. What would people do? Many people would run to eat something they always would have liked to eat. Some people will be a cheeseburger, but some people will be going to some kind of fine French restaurant. If we were told that there's certain things that were prohibited on Shabbos now became permitted, and now it's permitted to drive on Shabbos, many people start using their cars on Shabbos. But I suspect that if we're told suddenly that the Avodah Zorah Baal Peor was permissible, one was allowed to worship Baal Peor the way Peor is worshipped, I don't think that we would stampede to try to find opportunities to worship Peor. This worship Peor is really something very, very repulsive. Who would be attracted to something like this? So much so that Chazal tells us, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that there was a woman, a non-Jewish woman, who was very, very sick, and she promised that if she were healed from her illness, then she would want to cover all of her bases, so she would worship every single idol of the world. And she went around, she was healed, and she went around from cult to cult, from idol to idol, from temple to temple, and she worshipped every single idol, just the way that idol was supposed to be worshipped. Until she came to Peor. And she came to Peor, and she said, how do you worship this idol? And I told her, this is what you have to do to worship this idol. She said, you know what, I'd rather be sick than have to worship this idol. I have no interest in doing something like this. And yet with Klai Yisrael, it says, Vayitzamed Yisrael about Peor. They attach themselves to Peor. What could have attracted Klai Yisrael to the cult of Peor? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains that the cult of Peor is preaching something that is, in fact, attractive. Because the cult of Peor says that the last boundaries that a person may have, after breaking down all of morality and breaking down all of the restrictions that society and our sense of decency plays on us, the last thing that's left is your own inhibitions. Your own inhibitions, your own sense of humanity places certain inhibitions, a certain sense of shame that this book naturally created us with, that prevents us from being able to do certain things like the things that are involved in Peor. A law comes to call to Peor and says, everything is okay. There is nothing that's not permitted, and there's nothing you should feel yourself restricted from. Whether it's what society would have dictated as moral, what your community would have said as moral, what your family said as moral, and even what your own inner moral compass would have said, this is disgusting, this is something that I should not do. Peor says, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and indulge because you can do whatever you want. There are no restrictions at all. No restrictions whatsoever. And that's the attraction of Paul. Because Paul didn't just say, worship the idol, do this disgusting thing to the idol, despite the fact that it's disgusting, this is the way you worship it. Paul says, the more disgusting, the better. The Gemara, in fact, and again, this is not comfortable, but the Gemara tells us that there was a person who came to Paul and he wanted to know how to worship the Paul, and it told him this, how you do it, and he said, oh, well, I can really do this, right? And he went ahead and he defecated on the idol and then wiped himself on the nose of the idol. And when the priests of Paul saw this, they said, wow, we have never seen anyone do such a wonderful worship of Paul. You have excelled. You are the top Paul worshiper in the entire universe. So we see that the more disgusting, the more gross, the more detestable, the more repulsive that a person acts, more repulsively a person acts with Pa'or, that is the worship of Pa'or, because it says that which you are inhibited from doing, go ahead and do it, go ahead and indulge. Now with this, Chaim Shmuel explains a relationship between Pa'or and a mitzvah in the Torah that we would not normally have associated with the mitzvah, with this mitzvah. We not necessarily have seen a relationship between the prohibition of Paor and this particular mitzvah. Because the pasuk says in Parshas Veschanan, in Perek Dalad, pretty much near the beginning of the parsha, the pasuk says, "Was a seafall of davar shenochi mitzav eschem." You should not add to what I am commanding you. That means Israel Bal Tosef, you're not allowed to add to what the Torah says. Lo sigri men, and no shall you take away from it. You can't drop any of the mitzvahs or any part of the mitzvah. Why? Because your eyes witness Hashem's retribution and punishment when it came to Baal Peor. Anybody who worships Baal Peor, Hashem wiped out. What's the connection between this particular mitzvah of not tampering with the Torah and the cult of Peor, the worshipping of Baal Peor? Says of Chaim Shmuel is because that's exactly what Torah is all about. Torah is the antithesis of Paor. Torah gives us 613 mitzvahs. Those mitzvahs are the boundaries by which we live. Those mitzvahs are the boundaries that guide us and channel our energy in the right direction and help us grow and help us become the people who we are. Paor says, don't have any boundaries. Be boundaryless. You should have no boundaries whatsoever. So Lord comes into the talk with this mitzvah, Lo Sigru, don't take away from the mitzvah, but take away one mitzvah. Or even part of the mitzvah, if you think of all the mitzvahs as a fence around us that helps us keep us within the boundaries that we need to live, if you open up the fence just a little bit, make one break in the fence, even though the rest of the fence is there, the fence is worthless. There is no fence anymore. The fence is not happening. The fence is not protecting anything. All of the cows and all of the sheep can leave through that one break in the fence. And even Baal Tosef, if one adds another mitzvah piece, once you start tampering with it, you add, you take away, you blow the whole idea of having boundaries. And therefore, Hashem says you have to be very, very careful with the notion of boundaries, the boundaries that Torah gives us, and to make sure to live within those boundaries. Chaim Shmuel spoke about this back in the 1970s. And he said back then that we see this happening in society today, that this is what's happening in society, that society wants to live without boundaries. We can only imagine what we would have said in the year 2019. What would he have said now? Where everything that was once understood to be prohibited, everything that was once understood to be repulsive, is now becoming permitted. You know, this idea of not using the word manhole anymore, this is not a new idea. Back in the, I think it must have been the 70s or maybe, yeah, 70s or 80s, probably the 70s, during the height of the feminist movement, there was a movement to outlaw the use of the word manhole. And that idea was mocked back then, even though feminism was raging, was the rage of the day, and people were buying into it. But the word manhole and not using the word manhole seemed ludicrous, seemed like this taking things too far. And I even remember seeing an editorial in the newspapers at the time that said, oh, if you're not going to be able to use the word manhole, then you shouldn't be able to use the word woman either, because the word woman has the word woman, man at the end of it, and maybe from now on you have to call a woman a war person. Because you can't say woman because it's discriminatory. And that's how they mocked it. But they consider this idea of getting rid of the word manhole. But I think there's an important distinction between getting rid of the idea, getting rid of the word manhole today and the word manhole back then. And then the idea was about feminism, and making sure that women are not discriminated against, and making sure women are not looked down upon. So they said, we don't want to use the word manhole anymore, we want to use the word personhole or whatever it is. Today, it's not about men versus women. It's about erasing the notion of gender altogether. We know certain people in certain environments in the workplace are very, very aware of this, that the whole notion of gender, the whole clarity of gender is being erased because gender itself is a boundary. Because there are men and there are women, and there's certain modes of behavior, certain appropriateness between men and women, and the way women act and the way men act, and so on. It's understood that as long as we have a notion of gender, it places certain boundaries, certain moral boundaries on us. And along comes our society is trying to tear down this last vestige of boundaries that we still have in our society by saying that everything is okay, because our society really does preach this idea that everything is okay. And the only thing that's not okay is saying that something is not okay. Then you have a problem. Then you have some kind of phobia. Why are you saying that's not okay? But otherwise, everything is okay and everything goes. And hence we have the deconstruction of gender happening all around us. So where does this leave us? This leaves us with our Torah. This leaves us with our mitzvot. This leaves us with Baal Tosef and Baal Tigra, and to add and not to detract from the Torah, and to appreciate the gift of Torah, to appreciate that Torah makes our communities and our homes islands of sanity in a world that has gone crazy.